You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week so far. Make sure that you check out my episode on Wednesday. I interviewed the director of The Missing Children, which is an extraordinary documentary. You can find it on Amazon Prime or on Apple TV. I'm assuming you also watch Real Housewives of New Jersey this week. It's been really good this entire season. This week's episode in particular was really good. Jennifer and Margaret sat down to discuss the fallout from Margaret revealing early this season that Jennifer's husband, Bill, had an affair. One that Jennifer explained happened during her fourth pregnancy. Jennifer and Bill have five children. This affair happened well into her fourth pregnancy. As I've said before, I believe there's a place in hell for someone that cheats on a pregnant woman. And what's interesting is that there are two other cast members on the show with husbands who cheated while a woman was pregnant. Just try to unpack that. Well, throughout Jennifer's time on the show, she and Margaret have struggled to connect because they're really just very different women who have lived completely different lives. Jennifer was raised in a big family. She had a traditional marriage, stayed home to raise her children. Margaret was raised by a single mother. She got married young to a much older husband with whom she helped raise his children from his first marriage and then their son. And she got divorced and remarried a man she fell in love with while still legally married to her first husband and then built her own company. They have had almost the completely opposite life experience. And then you add gasoline to the fire. Jennifer found out about her husband's affair, and there was this unspoken agreement between them that they would never discuss it again, which disallowed her the opportunity to process the betrayal and to speak up for herself. So as she kept this secret, she's watched Margaret speak openly about her own affair publicly, not just on the show, but in a book she wrote. So if there was a lack of connection before, this would certainly make it all the more unlikely. So here we are, it's eight episodes into the season, and you get to witness these two women have a thoughtful conversation. Jennifer said she wanted to protect her kids from Bill's affair being made public. And Margaret said that she would have never brought the affair to light if she had known that no one knew of the affair. And then Jennifer said that she was not sure if she was ready to address the affair because it might make her realize she doesn't want to remain in the marriage. Very powerful. Jennifer is already so different than the woman that she was the first season. And I kept thinking that perhaps that's the blessing and the curse of the show. Some would say, why would you go on a show if you harbored a secret like this? But also, had she never been on the show, she may have lived a life feeling like she had never been fully independent because now she has her own income by being a cast member on the show and all the ancillary things that come from it. She would have felt like she never spoke her truth, would have no idea that other women have had similar life experiences and felt connected to them, like a much bigger community maybe that she had already had. And then I think that this is probably the most realistic version of Jennifer, fragile, fearful, unmoored, or at least temporarily. So when they hugged in the rain outside of that cafe and had that conversation, I just thought, that is great storytelling. The intersection of their lives and how their lives might totally change years from now because they decided to open their lives up on television. So I want you to go and watch that episode and you will see what I mean. I just, again, thought it was such great storytelling. I've already started watching the new Netflix show called The Ultimatum. That you're going to find next month on Netflix. It's hosted by Nick and Vanessa Lachey. It reminds me of Temptation Island a bit. Same team behind Love is Blind. I am certain that you're going to love it. This episode focuses on Discovery's three-part docuseries, Hillsong, A Mega Church Exposed, which is an investigation into the church made famous by its celebrity congregations such as Justin Bieber, various Kardashians, and other big stars. The series explores the rise of Hillsong, which was founded in Australia by Brian Houston as an offshoot of his father Frank's Sydney-based Pentecostal church. Hillsong stood out by putting an emphasis on music as part of worship. Later, Houston decided to export Hillsong internationally and recruited pastor Carl Lentz to lead its New York City chapter. Lentz became famous in his own right and was often photographed alongside Justin Bieber and other celebrity congregants until Houston fired him in November of 2020 for moral failures, among other issues. With more than 150,000 global members, Hillsong has recently been entangled in scandal. And this series profiles numerous ex-members of the church who've come forward to share harrowing allegations of the trauma, abuse, financial, and labor exploitation that's created a culture of chaos within the church. The series also examines how Hillsong was able to grow into a global brand while uncovering the truth behind the headlines of recent scandals and shining a light on the fine line between culture, corporation, and cult. As mentioned, music is a huge piece of Hillsong's soul. The church also doubles as basically a de facto record company. There's a yearly album, Hillsong Worship, a super group, Hillsong United, which has released 11 albums, as well as the Grammy-nominated group Young and Free, an Aussie collective that evolved out of youth ministry. So with familiar tunes and upbeat rhythms filling sanctuaries and churches everywhere, Hillsong is by far the most popular producer of mainstream Christian music in the world. They mass-produce music from their multi-campus worldwide bands under the labels Hillsong United, Hillsong Worship, and Hillsong Young and Free, of which are then sold for untold millions to unsuspecting worshipers and leaders who are willing to pony up for their product. So the vast majority of people that are listening to this are completely unaware of this dangerous cult-like tactics that the church uses to lure them into a loyal following. And as mentioned, they've got this practice of fostering musical talent as it comes up, ensuring this steady stream of songwriters and performers that are trained by the veteran members. So the church has this side label, Shout Music Publishing, which is for songs and artists that aren't Hillsong. Hillsong now is a publishing operations in the US, Australia, and the UK with more than 300 songwriters and close to 200,000 works under administration between Hillsong Music Publishing and Shout Music Publishing. So there's an enormous amount of money that comes with all that music. And there's always this question of, are the talent being compensated? How much of that money goes back into the church and to the community that they would like to serve? Al Mohler of the Southern Baptist Convention labeled Hillsong as a prosperity movement for the millennials, which has minimized the actual content of the gospel. And so you're going to watch this docuseries and wonder how you feel about it. Do you think that money and greed and prosperity have any place in the church today? So this episode features an interview with New York Post reporter Hannah Frischberg, who's been covering Hillsong for, I guess, almost 2 years now, and Ben Kirby from the Instagram account Preachers and Sneakers. He also wrote a book about it. We deep dive this most interesting story behind what will be a most talked about new docuseries in 2022. I'm so excited for you to listen to it. So here we go. 2 years ago for my birthday, my friend Carlene got me the most perfect birthday gift, a Vuori jogger. Since then, it has become a staple in my wardrobe. To know me is to know I love Vuori joggers. And here's why I love it. The product is incredibly versatile. It can be used for just about any activity like running, training, swimming, yoga, but also awesome for lounging or weekend errands. You will love the way you look in all Vuori clothing. And ordering your new favorite items could not be easier. Their website will showcase all the great colors and for all of their soft and well-made clothes. And here's another reason I love it. Vuori is 100% offsetting their carbon footprint. They're also reducing and offsetting 100% of their plastic footprint from 2019 and beyond. And they are utilizing better sustainable materials for their products, empowering your best active life. And for men, know that my husband loves Vuori pants too. They're perfect for running and his go-to travel pant. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for my listeners, they are offering, get this, 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/Kate. That's Vuori.com/Kate. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/Kate and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Hannah Frischberg has done a marvelous job covering the unraveling of Hillsong for the New York Post and is featured in the docuseries. I am thrilled to have her. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
So Hillsong was established in 1983 as Hill's Christian Life Center in New South Wales by Brian Houston and his wife, Bobby. The church has roots, though, that go to his father, William Frank Houston, who is a Pentecostal Christian pastor in Australia and in New Zealand. What can you tell me about Frank, Brian, and the theology behind Hillsong?
Hillsong has always really been a prosperity gospel from the start. I think at the very beginning in the 1980s, it starts a little more in earnest before becoming more akin to a multinational corporation than a church, which is how it exists now. But its roots are, it starts, Frank Houston starts a church in Australia. Eventually, Brian and Bobby Houston fuse with it, and it becomes Hillsong, is the merger that creates the church we know today.
And so they follow the general principles of Pentecostal Christianity, meaning that they believe that the Bible is to be the authoritative and final on all matters of faith. And this includes opposing abortion and stem cell research, as well as rejecting evolution and believing creationism should be taught in schools. And while the church believes homosexuality is against the teachings of the Bible, they do not condemn gay people, at least not publicly. It's pretty incredible the growth of this church, given all the churches of the world have seen their parish numbers dwindle. And they seem to have been very innovative, attracting large crowds, specifically of millennials. Basically like new ideas for an old message. What makes their church stand alone in the way that they have been able to grow this church to such a degree?
The music is what defines Hillsong. But then in addition, Brian is pretty obviously a charismatic leader. They are not afraid to take celebrity endorsements. They are not afraid to publicize themselves in a way that I think more traditional churches and maybe ones that at the end of the day have their congregants more, you know, at stake and are thinking of them would take. And yeah, they're all about the clout. They're all about the publicity. And that makes for popularity on the surface, but clearly it's corrupting.
So we're familiar in the States with Justin Bieber and certainly the Kardashians attending services. What was the first celebrity that really put them on the map? I'm assuming someone who was Australian.
That's a good question. I've actually heard that at the Australian churches, there are not a ton of celebrities. Like it's a lot of rugby players or people who are locally famous. But I don't know about first. Justin Bieber is definitely the most all-defining in terms of a celebrity connection. But, you know, Selena Gomez, Kevin Durant, there's been a ton of names over the years.
What was the first celebrity that really jumped out? Was it Justin Bieber? And how long ago would that be going back? Because it certainly feels contemporary now, but there must have been somebody that really put it in the map in the U.S.
Justin Bieber,
yeah.
For sure. Because Carl Lentz was for a time basically his personal spiritual advisor. And I think that's what brought awareness of Hillsong to a more secular group. And that was in the early 2010s.
And then Carl, who we will get into later, was certainly known as the go-to life coach of the celebrity in the U.S. Did Australians see the Australian pastors and church leaders in the same way?
You know, I think it's really fascinating and speaks possibly more to America than modern Christianity, but a lot of the congregants I've interviewed who attended services at Australian Hillsong campuses have said that there is not nearly the same level of toxicity and celebrity worship that you see at the American campuses, which, you know, certainly I think Hillsong as an entity is to blame for leaning in and you know, really giving their celebrity congregants more than they give to their regular non-celebrity congregants. But at the same time, I think it speaks to American celebrity worship, which apparently, yeah, at the Australian churches, you don't have as much.
Which is interesting too, because it would be an easy way for them to dismiss any publicity that comes out of the church in the last few years by connecting it to Carl and saying, well, he really moved away from the church's message, even though there's quite a bit of proof that there were a lot of other things going on in the church that were remarkably disturbing. The church, by the way, is now expanded to, what, 23 countries worldwide?
That sounds about right. Yeah, it's huge. The pandemic has hit it pretty hard, though, and they have seen a number of campuses close recently.
And then Hillsong holds dozens of conferences every year at its many locations, even owns and operates its own college of ministry. All of its locations are under the total and sole control of Brian Houston out of its headquarters in Sydney, Australia. None of its campuses are autonomous or free. Now, of course, we know in the U.S., religious institutions are tax exempt. What is that like in Australia?
Australian tax code. I'm not honestly sure. In the States, which is mostly what my coverage is focused on, yeah, they're tax exempt. They're very shady with their financials. If you look at them online, they're extremely well formatted documents, but they give you very few numbers. And what I can say to their Australian campuses, as well as their others across the globe, is a number of people have spoken to me about how concerned they are, how little of the money is going into missionary work, how little of the money is going into the kinds of things that are the reason the churches are tax-free. Ugh. I'll also add that to your point about Brian Houston having full control, it's very possible that he still does behind the scenes, but actually today the church made an announcement that he is resigning, which he's been resigning multiple times. I mean, I think this is like the third time he's technically resigned. He's been doing it incrementally as a kind of forgiveness campaign attempt for almost a year now, but he technically no longer has control.
And do you think that that's because of the panic that must be shaking him and the others to the core that this docuseries is coming out?
Definitely. A Hillsong Atlanta pastor actually resigned about 2 hours ago and posted about it on Instagram and directly referenced the docuseries, the scandals. I mean, morale can't be good, even if you believe in your heart that Hillsong's mission is great, then you still are going to be hurt by all of the congregants and all of the pastors and all of the problems with leadership coming out and saying this is a troubled organization. I mean, people don't really want to be associating with it anymore. Certainly a lot of the celebrities have pulled away.
This is insane. Wow. Okay, so in the early aughts, Hillsong founder Brian Houston was investigated by a royal commission into institutional responses to child sex abuse over sexual abuses perpetuated by his father, Frank, also a Pentecostal pastor who in 2000 admitted to sexually abusing a boy years earlier. According to The Guardian, Frank also served as the head of Assemblies of God and in Australia and New Zealand, where in the 60s, he allegedly abused multiple boys. One repeated victim from Sydney came forward in 1998, and his mother reported the abuse to Assemblies of God. Led at the time by Hillsong's Brian Houston. He forced his father to resign from his church duties, and over the next year, an internal investigation uncovered more abuse cases, but Brian didn't report any of those findings to authorities, which is a crime in Australia. While you were covering this part of the story, was there anything that jumped out at you, something that you found most interesting in the way this case was handled?
Brian Houston, how he dealt with his father's pedophilia. I mean, that's such a disturbing underpinning to have to an entire church, that your founder concealed his father's pedophilia. I mean, yeah, no, it's awful. And also the way Brian has handled it is pretty awful in terms of just the veneer of the press releases they send out. There was one I remember I got from Hillsong that someone forwarded me, they sent out on Christmas, or it was near Christmas. And it by all means should have been a Christmas-focused newsletter. It didn't mention Jesus once, and it was extremely apologetic for Brian's situation. It asked that congregants pray for the family. And it was just so myopic. And yeah, I feel bad that his father's a pedophile. That's not his fault. But the way he's handled the fallout is criminal, in my opinion.
And there were no legal consequences from that public hearing, but Brian was censured and guidelines for Hillsong were put forward, including but not limited to mandatory child protection training for pastors. Hillsong maintained that it had no direct involvement in the abuse that occurred long before it was founded. But then there are other things that are problematic. Many defectors have called the parish a cult that exploits its volunteers for endless free labor, which is interesting when you factor in that 2018, it was estimated that the church had made $100 million in capital in just a single year as a result of record and book sales and the standard ask of a 10% tithe. Pastor salaries are not disclosed, and there's a no vow of poverty taken. And also a hot topic, how much the international pastors take home in love offerings for speaking appearances, which are reported to be anywhere between $30,000 to $40,000 a pop. That I had no idea. So the love offerings, I don't think are just Hillsong alone. I think that is absolutely a mega church phenomenon. The amount of money that this church is making, and a lot of it, I understand, is from their music. So when it comes to the free labor, is the talent being paid for all of these performances and the music that they're creating under the helm of Hillsong?
No. No, it's an act of love, and they should be proud to volunteer for Hillsong. It was really disturbing to talk to people who had been used by their system. I mean, as a journalist, I know a lot of people who work for publications for less than they'd be paid elsewhere because, you know, they respect the publication and the publication has clout. But to see that same application in a church context with an entity that is not paying taxes and is supposed to be a community serving God was deeply disturbing. I mean, journalism isn't, you know, it's a industry that's not God related and doesn't, you know, have some kind of higher power in terms of its, you know, goals. But then, yeah, people have been abused by that system and people have not been paid and people have given a lot of free labor and become very disheartened and demoralized by Hillsong.
And then ex-staffers have told you as part of your coverage that that collected church money was added into a reloadable debit card to be used for expenses, however they choose to define them. That was mind-boggling too. Can you tell everybody a little bit more about these reloadable debit cards?
Yeah, I think that's when I fully lost all faith in Hillsong, was when further former congregants from the New York branch explained to me how tithe money was used. And pastors were pretty much just given free rein, yeah, through these reloadable debit cards to buy everything from ATVs, weekly manicures, lots of eating out. One congregant at a southern campus was telling me that a pastor took him out for dinner and then bought him and all of his friends jackets just with tithe money on text. Tithe money that's supposed to be going to bettering the church and bettering the community. And instead it just gave a few people who were in the elite of the church just this like ridiculous lifestyle.
So then there's this one story, and I couldn't believe it as I read it. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Michael Guglielmucci.
Oh yeah. Oh, that one.
Please tell everybody that story. This one I couldn't believe either.
Hillsong really has tried to distance themselves from this one more than perhaps anything else I've written about. But he said he had terminal cancer in 5-10 years ago now. And he started performing with Hillsong groups wearing a breathing tube and all sorts of medical gear. And it does add a rather profound element to his performances, if you watch them on YouTube, to see this dying man praising God with apparently his last breath. And then it came out he didn't have cancer at all. All made up, compulsive liar. And Hillsong handled it quite poorly.
And he accepted donations to help pay for his costly medical treatments.
Yes. Yeah, and he has since started another church somehow. Yep.
And also he apparently had a 16-year addiction to pornography, pretended to have leukemia, was an elaborate, misguided attempt to cover that up.
Yes, that story was truly something out of a TV show that you would watch and say, that's not believable. And that human exists and he is still in ministry.
So this is where I think people are going to catch up now to present day, because this Carl Lentz figure, we absolutely were familiar with, as mentioned, because we would see him in pictures with celebrities. And if you went on YouTube and you watched these videos, there is a very sleek packaging about how up to 8,000 members of the church would celebrate together in the city. Carl is the lead pastor. He would minister to, as mentioned, celebrities, professional athletes, actors. Their services featured rock music and concert lighting. Tell us the story behind Carl Lentz.
So Carl is initially a son of Hillsong who is beloved by Brian Houston and all the other upper management. They really give him a platform. He's a great public speaker. He becomes a face for the church. He starts attracting a lot of celebrity engagement. I mean, he's a good-looking guy. He's a good public speaker. He's suave on social media. And then, yeah, it balloons. He's like Justin Bieber's, cool hipster spiritual pastor. He's really giving a face to how Christianity can be hip and star-studded. And then, oh my God, someone told me a story about Carl Lentz making a volunteer run out to buy him a expensive cane at a CVS in the middle of a ceremony so that he could better enact being a shepherd with a flock. There's just so many anecdotes. But anyway, yeah. So Carl Lentz becomes this celebrity within the church, and then also the celebrity among celebrities in his niche sense. And then during the pandemic, he has an affair with a New York-based jewelry designer who decided to blow his cover because she was so disturbed by the fact that he was, saying he was this son of God and also a married man with children and a multi-decade marriage, and then just going around cheating with what it now looks like were multiple women. So I think a lot of people are in debt to Rinine Kareem, who Absolutely. Is the woman who came forward as his mistress. And I don't think it's a identity she particularly enjoys anymore, but you know, it was the intensity of her story and the amount of detail she was open to revealing about that relationship in the name of just pulling the rug out from what she obviously saw as a, you know, false idol in the form of Carl Lentz and the church as a whole. And since then, it's, you know, he got fired. His wife stayed with him, but their life is kind of unraveled. And yeah, now they're in Florida somewhere in a...
Also, because Rinine came forward, so did their former nanny, who was a former Hillsong New York staff member, Leona. She came forward with allegations that he subjected her to bullying, abusive power, and sexual abuse over the course of 7 years when she worked as their nanny. She was also married to somebody because over the course of time, she got married and she had her own child. And she was said that she was being essentially assaulted and that felt incredible amount of fear that if she were to come forward, she wouldn't be believed or her husband would lose his job. So by having Rinine come forward, more people were apt to listen to her. And she has said, which is a good thing, that the church actually has supported her and supports her, you know, absolutely. They, of course, have, as mentioned, they've released Carl from the church. How did he end up in Florida and what is he doing now?
For a while, he was having his rent paid by A-listers in L.A., and he was living in some obscenely expensive mansion. And then I guess the money ran out, and now he's in Florida. Someone once told me on background that he's pretty desperate for some kind of TV show deal. He's really hungry to be back in the spotlight what? Again, and is just like pulling. Well, of course he is, right? But yeah, I mean, I guess it also is like pretty assumptive that he thinks he can immediately have a comeback, but right. Yeah, he's been spotted with, it seems like some people stayed loyal to him. A lot of people distanced, definitely Hillsong distanced from him. Yeah. Now his wife apparently identifies as an interior designer, is focusing on repainting their house, it seems. And his kids all have very active Instagram presences.
Ugh, this story just gets more bizarre by the moment. Jeez.
Yeah.
This, I can't even imagine what this has been like for you and to have people consistently contact you with their own stories. What has been the most surprising detail you've learned being part of this docuseries and just as part of the work that you've done to cover this church?
I think just the general fact that some of the sources I've had for these stories are people who have come forward to tell me their Hillsong experiences have just had this kindness to them. And it's so upsetting to me to know that they've all been so taken advantage of by this institution. And it, yeah. So I think what's most surprising to me, just the combination of such a well-meaning congregation yeah. and such a, you know, selfish church.
Mm-hmm. That's what sticks with me too. I just feel like well-meaning, hopeful, faithful people that have been bamboozled and how that yeah. compromises the purity of their faith because of it.
Yeah, no, it's so sad. I was raised Jewish and I definitely believe in a higher power, but I've never had any part of my organized religious community or experience make me question it the way a lot of my sources have had to question it after being involved with Hillsong. And they're so well-intentioned and they're such good volunteers and yeah. mothers and sisters and friends, like truly some of the most wholesome individuals I've ever interacted with. And then it's just, why is this institution that brought them all together so corrupt? Mm-hmm. How does it have zero moral compass?
And then, so what's going to happen to Brian and Bobby? Will they just sort of oversee from the sidelines, do you think, or historically, as you mentioned, you know, he kind of resigns and then comes back. Do you think that they can weather this media storm?
I mean, I don't know what the church is really without them. The most charismatic leaders are the ones who have defined Hillsong the most. Mm-hmm. And, you know, without them, I guess there's not scandals, but I mean, maybe the popularity of the music arm can exist without like a face. But I don't know. I think the structure of Hillsong is kind of reliant on these very narcissistic individuals. So without them, yeah, maybe the problems go away, but I think you also just compromise the monetized infrastructure that they've built this place on.
So I guess my last question for you is, what makes Hillsong so fascinating, but also where you think your coverage will be a year from now?
I think the story is definitely developing. There are new scandals coming out daily. And what separates Hillsong? I think it's almost this like this cult of the mind. I mean, I feel like America's really obsessed with cults right now. And the moment someone gave me a quote calling Hillsong a cult, you know, that article trafficked really well. A lot of people were like, oh, it's a cult. And I think it's just really interesting how it's a cult, because it's not, you know, no one's there not by their own volition. But then after a while, they do get trapped in this toxic cycle that makes you think like, wow, this is an organized religion, one of the oldest ones known to man. And yeah, this is a cult. This is a group of people who are being taken advantage of to a degree that is cult-like. And I think that makes it interesting and separate and its own little, you know, narrative from, you know, we think like Heaven's Gate and, you know, the bigger cults. But so, yeah, it's like a cult of the mind.
Yeah, I think that sometimes people do think of Heaven's Gate like, well, it's not a cult because we're not laying on the ground with blankets over ourselves with like, you know, black running sneakers. But, you know, a cult can be right in the middle of daylight and it's about stripping away your own belief system and adopting another one, which can be the most scary.
Totally. And I also feel like, you know, the televangelists and the other Christian happenings that Americans would maybe most closely link to the word cult or just otherwise like blatantly tabloid friendly corrupt are like Hillsong is a different breed of that. You know, it's so well branded and it was so celebrity friendly. And yet it is this manipulation on a level that's not immediately obvious necessarily. It's just clear it's big and Christian. And then you look deeper and you realize how intense the toxicity is.
So tell everybody where they can follow you and where they can read all of your articles. And the New York Post has archived them. So you can just grab a glass of wine, sit back and read them all. I know that I have. So where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm at Han Frisch on Twitter and Instagram. And then all of my New York Post articles are under my byline on nypost.com. And then tomorrow we have a 3-part docuseries dropping on Discovery Plus in conjunction with the Post.
This has been such great work and I look forward to reading all the more coverage.
Thank you, Kate. Yeah, there's definitely more to come.
Oh, good, 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 good. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KateCasey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KateCasey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KateCasey.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Rocketmoney.com. /Wondery.
Ben Kirby is the creator of the viral social media sensation Preachers and Sneakers. I've been following it for a while, and I've been dying to talk to him. Ben caused an uproar across the globe after showing the values of what clothing preachers were wearing on stage. He's the author of In Preachers and Sneakers, Authenticity in an Age for For-Profit Faith and Wannabe Celebrities, and he is featured in the Discovery series. Ben, I'm so excited to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kate. Nice to finally meet you.
I know. I'm so excited to talk to you. So you boldly confront many of the difficult questions plaguing countless Christians' minds, and this docuseries is no exception. This actually all began when you were sitting on your couch on a Sunday morning watching worship videos on YouTube because you'd slept through church. And you noticed that one of the worship leaders was wearing $850 Yeezys. And you had the same question that I would have. How could a pastor afford shoes that cost more than your rent? And you had one post with a pastor in Maryland with a prolific social media. They had a pair of Air Jordans that retail for $8,100. A post identifying another pastor with Saint Laurent boots, one based in Charlotte and bills himself as having a global ministry, who had an expensive jacket on and was revealed that he built a $1.7 million McMansion for himself and his family. And he told his congregation it was a gift from God. And then, of course, those that watch Real Housewives have seen The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City featuring a pastor for two seasons who wore luxury labels. So you are the person I need to go to answer some of these questions. I know you began asking, how much is too much? Is it okay to get rich off of preaching about Jesus? Is it okay to be making twice as much as the median income of your congregation? What do you make of the way that these pastors have now leaned into a life of prosperity?
Yeah, it's pretty multi-layered because, those varying degrees of prosperity being part of their brand. Like some are blatant about the whole transaction of, hey, if you have more faith, if you sow more money into the ministry, God's going to return things 100-fold. And there's others that are more like motivational speaker types that are basically like, God wants you to be happy. And it makes it a little more vague, that kind of thing. But there has been this interesting trend for the past few years that I just happened upon. Like I'm no expert on, or I wasn't an expert on this. I guess I've spent the last 3 years really digging deep into all this stuff. But we found a way to kind of productize Christianity, and that it looks different in a very like a various amount of ways. But the reality is like we do a ton of stuff for money in church and Christian world. And a lot of it is amoral maybe, or some of it's amoral, but taking a macro look, it does seem like we as Christians care a ton about money and success and appearance and that kind of thing. And that the sneakers were just something that seemed to be the tipping point for a lot of people. And I had never planned to cause a quote unquote uproar about this, but clearly, you know, you included, people have been thinking this kind of thing and just didn't have a tangible way to point at it. And the sneakers were the thing that people could point to and say, see, this is something about this feels gross. And thankfully, people were trying to dig deeper into that feeling. I'd prefer not to be in the business of judging what's too much for who, because there's a lot of things that are relative across the board. At a minimum, this communicates that you can afford to not sell shoes that are worth $2,000. And you're communicating that, having ostentatious clothing or, you know, paying for major brands is okay as a believer and often encouraged. And that is kind of counter to the lifestyle of Jesus. It's counter to what we're called to as Christians, if you believe in Christianity. And so it just makes things confusing for people, especially with, you know, life being freaking hard and it being hard to make money and, mortgages and car payments and all that kind of stuff costing money, to see a pastor on a very large platform, wearing shoes that are worth more than a mortgage. And historically those roles being funded by sacrificial donations, it starts to confuse people. It starts to anger people. And I think at the beginning I was kind of angered by it. You know, I've gotten to look behind the curtain a lot more than most people, to where I see some of the nuance in it, but I think the question and the sometimes even criticism is warranted because it's at a minimum distracting. Like it's distracting from what the whole point is of trying to follow God, elevate him, and not elevate the person that is delivering the word, delivering the sermon.
Especially because you would go to a service and you would want to feel at home, that you are amongst people that understand your mutual struggles. And then if someone's standing before you and they seem to have an elevated lifestyle, I can see why that would be very confusing. Like one of your most liked posts was a photo of Hillsong pastor Carl Lentz, who baptized Justin Bieber in a pair of $800 Fear of God sneakers. And this gentleman has been living some kind of lifestyle, wouldn't you say? How long have you been observing the Hillsong megachurch, those in the orbit, and the way that they present themselves to their congregations?
Yeah, to your point, I think, you know, Hillsong specifically, I don't know if they ever wrote this down, but it seemed like there was an intention of creating an environment that was inviting to people that may have, you know, the whole West Coast, East Coast lifestyle, maybe a higher net worth, maybe, I mean, obviously celebrities. And so I think there might've been some intention there to create an environment that wasn't like a stuffy church pew that a lot of us are used to, but somewhere along the way, it might've swung completely in the opposite direction where now it's unapproachable or feels unapproachable to people that may be struggling financially or may have a whole slew of issues with their church experience. And with Hillsong being an innovator and really an influencer in modern church culture, that trickled down to more local churches and other churches across the country. So now it all looks pretty similar, where it's the same kind of structure, the same good-looking worship team, the same type of delivery and sermon. It's the same type of fundraising and conferences and bringing in outside speakers. And it's all like one big production. So, I mean, Hillsong has kind of been at the center of it. I think they would be proud of the fact they helped revolutionize the worship piece of it, like the musical worship piece of it. I mean, because churches sing their songs every Sunday and have been for the past, I don't know, 10 years or so. I don't know how long they've been around, but it's been interesting to get a more behind the scenes look into some of the good and the bad. And, you know, I don't think anybody argues that it's a massive influential organization. I think there's arguments about their effectiveness or their focus. And, you know, I think that's what they're going to get into in the documentary.
So do you think that Hillsong is one of the many examples of how celebrating and rewarding the blessing of fame, popularity, influence has changed? Like pastors now functioning like talent, performing for an audience like a spokesman for the church's brand. So the church becomes almost like a business with, I mean, in Hillsong's case, they've made a massive amount of income off of their music and they have merchandising. So with that, you have a leader who has a certain look to themselves and is preaching that to be happy, you have to have things. Do you think that their massive success in a time when it's really hard to get parishioners into congregations, that they've really been part of this movement and have some culpability in the way that the message has been muted?
Yeah, to your first point, it's an effective strategy to bring people in the front door to have a attractive, charismatic person at the helm that is kind of the brand. I go to so-and-so's church, I go listen to so-and-so preach. But the counter to that is that it is a very wobbly stool to be sitting on, because as you see with some of these very big name preachers, if they mess up morally or something, the entire ministry comes crashing down. And so to me, it's very shocking to me that we still elevate guys and girls like this to the point where we know that they're not surrounded by people that have, that are holding them accountable. I mean, you can look at a lot of these guys' churches' websites and it's basically like senior pastor such and such and his wife so and so. And there is no like elder board, there is no advisory council. And so it's like, oh, they're literally putting the entire thing in this one man's hands. And it just seems foolish to me. just objectively. And I'm surprised that the people that go to these churches aren't like, hey, dude, this seems at least risky. Like, this is a huge deal. This is Christianese, but like shepherding people's spiritual walks is a very high important calling. And we're basically allowing one person to influence that at scale. It's pretty scary to me. And yeah, we see it all the time. People mess up, their ministries erode. And now we're back to having people write about it in the New York Times about how hypocritical Christians are and Christian leaders are, that kind of thing. And it seems like it's got to stop at a certain point. But like, you know, to be fair, I don't think it's objectively wrong to have nice things or to be a better speaker than the other, or to even like be hired to speak elsewhere. But it does seem like there is a trend of churches caring more about getting those type of people in the door to attract new members or new congregants in order to attract more donations, of which they have no reporting requirements or any tax requirements. Like, you know, churches here in Dallas, I mean, will clear $100 million a year and not have to report anything. It's just like, yes, you hope that it all is above board, but also it could not be and nobody would know. It's just, it's crazy the scale of this thing. It's a great business, whether or not they intended to create it as a business. But I think there's going to be some things that change. There's got to reach a tipping point, because we're going to continue seeing larger than life figures with immense power over these organizations, hundreds of millions of dollars that they don't have any additional accountability to. I think at a certain point, something's going to change, but I don't completely know what that is. There is something about, I don't know what it is about Hillsong, and there's a couple others, like associations of churches, that just can't stay out of the headlines. And I'm assuming it's good for numbers, all their metrics, but for whatever reason, Hillsong every couple months seems to be in the headlines. And I'm not sure what that is, but there is something there that cannot be like fixed, it seems like.
So what is your hope as witness to this? I mean, it's been what, maybe 3 years now that you've been kind of on the sidelines watching how this mm-hmm. whole, how things have changed. Mm-hmm. What is your hope standing on the sidelines?
For individuals, I hope people will, because a lot of people don't like this celebrity pastor idea because it feels inauthentic. It feels counter to what, you know, what we read in the Bible. And so my whole deal for people is I hope others will choose to be more authentic about their faith, be more authentic about what it means to actually be a Christian, you know, not just go to church to be in a social club or to be associated with a major brand, but to actually go to wrestle with their faith and help the community, help their quote unquote neighbor, because that's what matters in life. And especially as Christians, we're called to make disciples. And a lot of this consumption, going to church on Sundays just to enjoy the worship music, get a word from the pastor, and then bounce, is just not doing anything or not doing much for people's eternities. I think if you talk, people have had life-changing experiences with Hillsong, with Passion, with maybe even Elevation, but at a macro level, it's a show. And I hope people can eventually see through that and start asking questions of the organizations they're involved in, the churches they go to, so that they can push for more authenticity in their own faith and their religion and how they act on social media. Because, you know, at the root of this is kind of an inauthenticity that people now don't have as much patience for. And so my whole thing is I want people to push for more authenticity in their faith and in their lives. So, you know, with Hillsong specifically, I don't know what's going to happen with them. They're a massive organization. I know they know who I am and what I do, but I don't know if they care. They might see what I do as like ankle biting, which is fine. but I think it's the sneakers are just the tip of the iceberg in terms of like what mm-hmm. the issues are with celebrity pastors, with churches as brands, that kind of thing. So I hope people's eyes are opened and are willing to ask questions, even if they're uncomfortable.
So you can find God by way of something other than a Burberry jacket.
That's right. Yes. My thesis is that, yes. And vice versa, maybe there is a way for God to work by way of a Burberry jacket, but he can do anything. But I think at scale, it's more likely that he is going to work through humility and servanthood instead of flash and flex and brands and fame, I think.
You would need to look up The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City's Mary Cosby and knew a deep.
I've seen her. People send her stuff to me all the time.
Unbelievable.
She's pretty stacked.
She's pretty stacked. Well, Ben is the author of In Preachers and Sneakers, Authenticity in an Age for For-Profit Faith and Wannabe Celebrities. And where can they find your book?
Preachersandsneakers.com has all the links there. You know, the publisher doesn't like me to promote one super easy retailer over the other, but I know where most people buy their books. But preachersandsneakers.com is where you can find the book and the pod and all the social links, that kind of thing.
Terrific. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Kate. Thanks for having me.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests, Hannah and Ben, and remind you that you can click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey. Talk about this episode and others. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. You can find me on Instagram at Kate Casey CA. See what I'm up to all week and see that list of what to watch this week. You can get that list at katecasey.substack.com. It is free in your inbox. Every Monday, a guide to what you should watch. I'm on TikTok at It's Kate Casey, Cameo Kate Casey, and of course, Patreon for bonus episodes by going to patreon.com/KateCasey.
Listen to the 48 Hours podcast for shocking murder cases and compelling real-life dramas from one of television's most watched true crime shows. Go behind the scenes of each episode with award-winning CBS News correspondents and producers in Postmortem, a weekly deep dive. Listen to 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts.